and welcome to Free Grace International's podcast. Usually we have three or sometimes more on a podcast, but today it's just me and go ahead and introduce
Krista.
Krista.
Hello, I'm Krista.
Your voice seems really familiar. Where did we meet?
Oh, we met at Kilgore College many years ago, but most recently in our kitchen.
I was thinking we met on the day that we got married, but that makes it sound like it was an arranged marriage. And it was an arranged marriage by you and me. I mean, if you think about it, all marriages are arranged by somebody. So
I guess that's true.
You know, the only truly non-arranged marriage would be one that is accidental. I wonder if anybody's ever been accidentally married.
I'm sure it's happened.
Seem possible. You know what? I think it did happen once at the School for the Blind in Pasadena, but I don't know.
No, come anyway, on. I was thinking more like Google, Las Vegas or something.
Googled. Oh, yeah. That's more likely. That's more likely. All right. Well, hey, so the other folks that are normally on had a scheduling conflict. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to interview Krista. She works with Free Grace International. So let's just start by, you know what? Let's start with talking about your history with Free Grace International and what it was before that and kind of work your way. I mean, people are familiar with you, but maybe give a little bit of a backstory of all of that.
So what was that?
That was my desk.
Are you
my
okay?
My desk just ascended 3 inches. I have this standing desk and I didn't realize it has to click into place.
Are you squatting now?
It only went down 3 inches. I had to lower it, but I didn't know it has to get to a clicked position. So it's now in a clicked position and I'm ready.
All right, I'm going to start with a bang. So, Free Grace International was originally called 289 Design. It was a ministry started by my dad and Amy Page. And they were graphic designers and looking to help other ministries with their graphic design skills. So that's how the ministry really started out. And I joined on not too long after they started because I was working as a graphic designer at a newspaper, which not to talk negatively about newspapers, because I'm sure there's people who enjoy that job, but it was pretty excruciating for me. So I moved on from that and wanted to do something that had a bit more purpose to it for me. So we, instead of doing ads for the newspaper, so I joined 289 Design and I was trying to think. It would have been
12, maybe 11, 12.
Yeah, like probably 2012. Yeah, okay. That seems about right. And was it just a year later that you joined?
I joined the same moment that Eily was born, our oldest.
Okay, so that would have been 2 years later because she was born in 2014. Yeah. And after you joined, the ministry kind of, I mean, I feel like it had already started to shift a little bit. We were creating gospel tracks, not just doing design work for others. But when you came on board, I feel like it really shifted more towards a lot heavier on we're creating materials to help share the gospel and help people grow in discipleship versus just helping other ministries in a support kind of way.
And I remember that first day, the first thing I did was, it's a kid's book that we have called Good Enough. And so it was like from the very beginning of me being on. I mean, I remember sitting down that first morning saying, okay, well, what am I going to do? I was like, I'll write a rhyming kids book. But it was based on an idea that dad had that he had kind of been toying around with and he was going to illustrate, but it needed some writing. So yeah, that was a big shift from what what y'all had been doing, but it wasn't so much a shift from the tracks. I mean, that's true. The tracks had already existed. I don't know how many there were at the time, but there were a few tracks that were kind of like John 3:16 tracks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I forgot your question.
Well, so what happens after that? Like what, how did you get to where I stole all the hours? You know, like I mean, it seemed like pretty quickly.
Started having children.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it seemed like, cause for a while it was like, it's a full-time job, but we shared it. You know, we both kind of worked, but I don't know. I guess I just kind of greedily gobbled up the working hours and you, yeah. Well, you know what I really wanted was to be able to keep the kids more and change diapers and feed everybody. But you just were so greedy. You wanted to do all those things. I think.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
I can't remember how it went exactly, but yeah. So then fast forward to a bit, but you've been involved. I mean, you haven't ever stopped being involved.
It's just kind of been an ebb and flow. I feel like since we started having kids, with each baby got a little less time available, to put in.
But now that
our babies are becoming less baby, not as much babies, but getting older, I'm able to put a little more time back in. So,
yeah. Well, and there were like groupings of time where it was pretty intensive. Like for a while, we were doing a puppet show, a live stream puppet show, and you were really, really involved in that.
I was very pregnant, and it came to a halt whenever.
Yeah. Yeah, but we did get the season finished. We did a whole season of shows for Christmas.
And then between Leo and Lux, we did the children's podcast.
The kids' podcast.
It was very involved while I was very pregnant. And then as soon as I had him, came to a stop. It's kind of been that way.
But the various events that we've done, you've pretty much always been involved in those, especially the campouts and the stuff like that, which has led to
team efforts have been able.
But that's led to the most recent event that has been done, which I think would be good to talk about, like to just kind of go through the vision for that event. And then we'll kind of talk about how it went.
Yeah. So the most recent event was, last weekend of January, first weekend of February. It kind of straddled the few days, one weekend, straddled those 2 months. We did our very first Free Grace International Women's Retreat. And
that was done after a number of years of a men's retreat.
Right.
It lag so long? Why didn't y'all do it first?
Well, I don't know why y'all just, I think it started with the guys had the idea to do a hiking trip and men's retreat. And it sounded like a lot of fun to us. Yeah, I think it was Sean and Pete.
Sean came on board and immediately started talking about, we need to do events.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the reason why I asked that is because like the ladies have traditionally been a lot more likely to get together than the men. And so it's kind of a funny swap around, but I think Sean brought that with him, and then others kind of picked it up from there.
Well, and I think a lot of times those things happen more like within churches, you know, a certain church will put it on. And so for just a ministry to do it is a little different because you don't necessarily have all these connections with the people involved already.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of coming into it, not knowing everybody, not knowing exactly what to expect. And, but you guys did it and it seemed to be really great. And so a lot of the wives of the men who went on the men's retreat, you know, were asking about, well, what about a women's retreat? And I thought that sounds great. Let's do it. But I don't think I can handle doing that with a baby on my hip. So that kind of just lagged behind a little bit till felt like we had a good enough time where be able to leave the babes for a bit and do all the planning without sacrificing, you know, needed time with them. And
it's interesting what you said about the kind of the difference in, okay, so like with a church event, a lot of times you're connecting, you're doing fellowship with people you already have a connection with. But like the first year of the men's event was basically all strangers other than those that came together, you know? So was that the same with the women, or was it, or did y'all know each other better?
Well, a lot of the women knew of each other because our husbands knew each other, and it was pretty funny. So I had been told by you that something really that you found meaningful with the men's retreat was that, I think it was Sean had asked, why are you here on the first night of the men's retreat? Is that right?
I don't remember
anyway,
that at all.
That's what I heard you say. You had,
I'm remembering it now. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to go around and say why you were here. And anyway, so I did that at the women's retreat as well, just kind of as a nice way for us to get to know each other. But a lot of the women said, because my husband went on the men's retreat and they are constantly texting all of the guys from
the
retreat.
Well, that's definitely true. Oh my goodness, that's insane.
There was a lot of laughter in the room and a lot of, yes, you know, everyone understood how much their husbands were texting these friends. So I think, you know, a lot of them came because of the looking for that friendship. But it was interesting how there was, you know, there was a group of a pretty, you know, I don't know, maybe half the group knew each other beforehand coming.
Okay.
But there were some people that knew absolutely nobody there. I mean, they didn't know anybody and came. And I just was amazed by that. Like, wow.
They didn't know anybody? Like, how did they get connected?
They get our newsletter. They got our emails or something, saw a Facebook post. But they didn't, they had never met anybody that was coming. So they knew of me. Because I'm your wife, you know, but that was about it. And of Abby, because she's Sean's wife. And, but yeah. And then there were some other ones that it was like one lady was going and she just put the word out to her friends. And her friends were like, yeah, I'll go. Even though they didn't even know anything about Free Grace International. There was quite a few there that knew nothing about Free Grace International even. So
golly.
It was really interesting group of people.
Wow. Yeah, that's a unique crew then. So you had people that were uninitiated in whatever this thing is that we do. What was the events like? Well, no, you had an interesting, before we talk about what was planned, talk about what was unplanned.
Yeah. So I just finished writing an article for the newsletter about all of this, but we, Our big goal for the weekend was just this like relaxing weekend in the mountains, but we're on the edge of the Smoky Mountains, so we can hike, and we're in Gatlinburg, so we can shop, we can eat, we can even do like a tram ride. There's just tons of stuff to do, something for everybody. But our big goal was just to relax and, you know, get to know each other, to build some friendships. But we saw in the forecast that, oh, there might be some snow. But then the next day it was like, it would go way down. So it was like, okay, it's going to be fine. Oh, it's going back up. Anyway, we just kind of made the decision. We're going to do it. Come what may, we're going to do it. We're going. And so we drove, over 800 miles to get there. So it took a couple of days. And, but as we get closer, it's like, it's getting colder and colder, and the chance of snow is getting higher and higher. You know, the group in our car was coming from Texas, and we're all native Texans. So we're all like, oh, what are we going to do? What have we done? and we got to the, we were shopping in the grocery store, getting supplies for the weekend there in town before we headed up to the house. And one of the girls with us overheard the local grocery store worker saying, yeah, it's going to be a bad one. Everyone's stocking up. We're just so I was freaking out on the inside and, you know, had some very strong, lovely ladies with me that, you know, just kept reminding me, God's got this, you know. He knew about the storm before it was coming, and it was just, you know, yes, you're right. Yep. Need to just focus on that. So anyway, we made it. The house was like this gorgeous big house, and we were just keeping track of all the different groups coming in, flying from different places, renting cars, driving in. And finally, the last car drove up this really long, windy, steep driveway. They pulled up just at dark, just as the snow started. So it was just like deep sigh of relief. Okay, we all made it. We're here. And but then it, you know, it started snowing, and then it just didn't stop snowing. It just snowed and snowed and snowed for like a full day. And I don't know, we didn't measure it, but it looked, I mean, I think it was like a foot of snow out there. It was just,
sheesh.
I'd never seen so much snow, you know, fall at one time. Man. And anyway, so we were snowed in. There was no hiking, no shopping, no eating out or taking tramway rides. We were just kind of stuck together. But as the weekend kind of went on, we realized that God knew exactly what we needed, you know, for this group of ladies that many of us didn't know each other, just coming from all these different backgrounds and places. And you need time together to get to know one another and to, you know, just kind of reflect on life and be able to share, you know, share things with each other. And so it turned out to be really great. But there was still that fear of like, but how are we gonna get down? Because, I mean, this driveway was insane, and
were y'all so y'all were like on the peak of a mountain or something?
Yeah, we were like up on a mountain. You know, it was off the main road, but then I didn't like measure it, but it felt like a mile that you're driving on this driveway, you know, but it's like going around curves and it's really steep, and you're just, you look to your right out the window and it's just downhill, like there's nothing, you know. It's just I mean, there were trees, so you wouldn't, you know, you would get caught by a tree, but there's not like a roadblock or anything like that. And it's a driveway, so it's not like a very, it's a one lane kind of thing, you know. It's not, it was paved, but anyway, yeah, so it was like, how are we going to get down? The Airbnb, or whatever, the property managers, we were talking to them, like, what can you do here because for us? Because, you know, it looks, we're kind of stuck. And they tried getting a snow plow up, and it got stuck, so it couldn't come up all the way. And then they tried this, like, back driveway that apparently had some downed limbs, so they were going to try and get some guys up there with chainsaws to clear it, and but they couldn't make it either. They were snowed in where they were at. Anyway, it was basically like, sorry, but you can stay as long as you need to, you know?
Yeah, good luck.
And so they did leave a snow shovel for us, and one other lady had the foresight to bring a snow shovel, so we had two snow shovels. So our choices were stay an extra day.
Who brought the snow shovel?
It was a lady from Tennessee. So she
she knew what y'all were in for.
She was watching the weather and had a snow shovel. You know, someone had asked on a group message, maybe we should bring a snow shovel. Someone bringing one was like, we're from Texas. Our kids just got done sledding after a little ice storm on a toilet seat cover, literally.
We don't have the equipment. The requisite equipment is absent.
So, anyway, but there were enough women there that have, you know, dealt lived with snow all their lives that weren't daunted by the task of shoveling some snow. And even one of the older ladies, she was pretty quickly out just shoveling the driveway, like the top part of the driveway where all the cars were parked. Not it was flat. But then it was, I think it was Abby, which, you know, Abby has done CrossFit. She's very in shape. This is Sean's wife. And she got out with the other shovel and she shoveled some down the driveway. And she came back. She was like, I think we can do this. We got this. We can shovel ourselves out. Thinking, you might be able to, but like, I do not. Exercise is not part of my daily routine, so I'm not sure. But she got out there, and there were two shovels, so it was like, okay, I'll do a shift. I'll go try shoveling. But it was funny because we had noticed it's when you're out shoveling with someone, you know, we're doing like parallel paths in the snow, just enough for the tires to go down.
Oh, for the tires. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but as you're, you know, you kind of get at different, go in different speeds. So you may not be in like close enough range to talk to the person shoveling. Also, it's kind of hard work. So talking is kind of, you know, difficult and it's loud. So, but you can hear the person's shovel scrape in the ground. And I noticed as I was shoveling, like I'd be getting kind of tired, ready for a break, but I hear Abby's shovel just still going at it. I'm like, all right,
he's
I'm gonna
still
keep
grinding.
Going.
Yeah.
And and then, you know, Abby took a break and Allison came out and she grabbed one and she was doing it. And she said the same thing to me. Like, I thought I was feeling kind of tired, going to take a break, but I heard your shovel going. So I kept my shovel going. And it was just that way for, you know, different shifts of people. And we did. We shoveled all the way down that driveway.
And, how far you think it was?
I don't know. I feel like it was a half mile.
Would you say 10,000 miles?
No. It was probably less than a mile. But it was, I mean, it was pretty long. No, it probably wasn't a mile. It was probably a half mile. I don't know.
Have you ever shoveled snow before? I've never shoveled
snow. No, that was my first time in my life to shovel snow. And it was surprisingly like therapeutic. Some of the people who had lived in the north were like, I love shoveling snow. But it was kind of, you know, kind of like mowing the lawn or gardening, things that, you know, you see the progress as you're going and it makes you sweat, but you see the progress. So it's kind of, it is kind of fun to do. And you're just out, you know, outside, which is always nice. So especially after being inside. Days.
So what did you guys do? Yeah, the inside for days I'm interested in. So like what did y'all do then? Because you were gonna be out and about, but then you're in and not about.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
It was a lot of just staying cozy and eating and sharing with each other, but we did bring some like fun, just kind of silly things to do, like, you know, beauty masks, face masks, things, and toenail polish, some like, you know, fun girly stuff to do. And we also brought some pretty silly games that got everybody laughing. And we had a number of devotions planned, different women shared, which was really good. And, just nice when you've got the extra time, like there's no rush of, oh, we've got to get out to get to this place at this time to do this thing. It's like, we're just here. So the devotion time probably went a lot longer, not the teaching so much as the just sharing after that. Which was really cool because people, you know, just different women shared parts of their story that, you know, some really difficult parts of their story that had just, you know, sometimes had everyone in tears, but then they're also sharing about God's grace in those difficult times and just the work that God had done and, you know, and just really encouraging. And there was a lot of laughter just the whole weekend, lots of laughter. So we had brought some other stuff just for, you know, I'm a crafty person, so I travel with crafts wherever I go. So we brought watercolor and yarn for crocheting, things for embroidering. Anyway, just lots of the stuff like that. And some people did do that. Not everybody, of course, but had card games, things like that. So I don't know, a lot of just slow activities, but that allow for a lot of time just, you know, hanging out, getting to know each other. Yeah. There was a hot tub there. And so that was fun because you had to run through the snow to get to the hot tub. It's yeah. always a question of, do I take my shoes or do I leave my shoes inside?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was getting videos of you, I guess, in your hot tub apparel, jumping into the snow and then jumping back into the hot tub.
So like, we thought they've
lost their minds.
Well, you know, when you're cooped up that long, you start to do crazy things. But we thought it might be like the effect of like a polar swim, you know, if you,
yeah.
you were in a hot tub and then you went and made a snow angel. I think I think it was the same effect.
Oh, I'm sure it is. The body reacts. That's for sure. Well, so what's the plan in the future? I mean, like, is this a one-off or are we looking at future ones?
Oh yeah. I think that, we sent out a survey afterwards, just trying to gauge how it was for everybody. And, I think we definitely need to do another one. It seemed like there was a lot of positive feedback for that. And it was surprising because I put on the survey because we had kind of joked about while we were there, like, next year we're going to the beach, you know? So I put on the survey, do you prefer the mountains or the beach? Do you prefer winter or, you know, summer, another season? And I feel like the overall, what people said was, I don't care where and I don't care when. Just want to do another one.
Wow.
And so that's cool. That was kind of,
yeah,
that was really fun to,
it's about the people. Yeah. It's not it about is. The events. Yeah. Well, and it has to be about the people for this one because the events were all canceled. So,
right. Yeah.
All there was the people.
Yeah. The only events we had to lean on were a Tiny Hands game that I had brought and things like that. You're in trouble if that's what you're counting on to get through the whole weekend. So,
well, you can imagine how tough it would be if you had like an event that relied on a famous speaker and a band and all that. That just wouldn't have. It would have been canned. You know, you would it would have killed it. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, our events so far have all been sort of similar to that. Not all snowed in, but I mean, just similar to that. That the draw is the people.
Yeah.
I think we probably just figure that if people want entertainment, they can go do that with their family pretty easily. But what we're really doing is, and you know, we learned this over time. I think our first camping trip as a ministry was to, wasn't it the Hot Springs one?
Yeah. It was cold.
Yeah. And And that one it was camping, of course, but we planned a bunch of stuff in town where, you know, people would drive into town and mm-hmm. kind of go do things. But it was like, actually, it seemed better just to be together. And it's what we came to be is together. And, you know, and it kind of attracts people from, and it's interesting. There's a difference between what the campouts have attracted and what the men's and women's retreats have attracted. It seems like the men's and women's retreats have actually attracted people from pretty broadly across the country. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, was that true of y'all's as well? I mean, you had some from Florida and Virginia, maybe?
Well, Virginia, Nebraska, Tennessee, and different parts of Texas.
Yeah, okay.
I think that was, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty big spread to the, you know, mm-hmm. we have generally made a number of friends through these things in the mid and the eastern part of the United States. We're still looking for those western friends, California, yes. Oregon, Washington.
Well, isn't the next guys retreat in Utah?
We're gonna inch that way. Yeah, we're gonna go to Utah.
Maybe you're going a little more that direction, we'll start
Yeah,
gathering.
Yeah, we'll be part of that way. Yeah, and that's true. The location has been on the east. You know, it's been kind of easterly. Yeah. So, I want to make connections out there.
I was thinking about with the campouts. I feel like one thing that we really learned was doing meals together is valuable. That first one,
that's better.
We didn't do any meals together. We just had like some snacks kind of thing. And I feel like that was the biggest takeaway was we're losing so much time doing meals separate from each other. And so then the next camp out, we made it happen where we did all our meals together and it was great. You know, people had just so much more time together. And I feel like, you know, that was one thing that the women's retreat, Sarah, my sister, she did. Planned all the meals for it, but she planned these amazing, like, it wasn't just pizza night, it was gourmet pizza night, and they were like these incredible, you know, pizzas, things you would never dream of putting on a pizza, but it's just, you know, tastes amazing. And so we had all these great meals, but of course they take a little more effort to put together. And I mean, the ladies just like jumped in. You didn't have to ask anybody to help, or you didn't have to struggle alone. You know, it's like people were happy to jump in the kitchen and help cook. And then the house we got had this huge long table where everyone could sit together.
Oh, and that's so cool. I didn't know that.
That was a big thing we looked for, because we knew this from the campouts that eating together is a big deal. And it was like one huge long table, and then it had like one off to the side, but it was all together in the same space, and we all fit and had these meals, and then everyone pitched together to clean up. And, you know, anyway, it was just I'm reminded many times of the importance of eating together. And just, you know, even like Jesus and his ministry, how often he was eating together with people. And
did they eat together, not only did they eat together, but what happened during their meals was important enough to make it into the Bible. You know, like quite a few meals are actually talked about in the Gospels. Well, I guess in the Old Testament too, but it's like mealtime is often pivotal, you know, for decision making or for relationship building or whatever. So, first camp out, I don't know why we did it that way. I think we were just thinking, oh, it'll be tough to try to feed everybody. But
there was not a place to cook for everybody.
Oh, we didn't have, that's right. Because it was
on an RV. That would have,
So we switched
to a campground that had a big kitchen.
Basically
that we could
a cafeteria.
Rent.
Yeah. Kitchen and cafeteria, which was cool. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So the conclusion of that then was that it looks like you'll do it again. So like for folks that want to, you know, put that on the calendar, what are you aiming for as far as date, do you think?
I wish that I could tell you, but I
mean, just generally speaking, you think you'll do winter again?
I don't know. You know, it's just with winter, like we had the sad thing about the snow that we had was that there were some people that bowed out because they were driving by themselves, and it would have been too dangerous for them to try and do it from where they were coming from. They were like right in line with the storm, you know? Mm. So I am looking more at trying to figure out some other dates that we might have less risk of that kind of, you know, of a thing keeping people from being able to come that had registered to come and were looking forward to it and everything. So,
but
for a lot of moms, it's like, that winter time is actually kind of the sweet spot because it's after the holidays and, you know, things kind of slow down a little bit. Whereas the summer, you know, depending on if you homeschool or not, where the kids are at and, you know, anyway, so I honestly do not know. But that's one thing that we're definitely working on, and we're getting more, trying to be more, open to other locations, not locked into that location, obviously. So,
Well, and for people that get the email, they'll get some notification when it's coming up. I mean, maybe it'd be worth just saying, like, if somebody out there is listening to this and has has an idea for a location and, you know, maybe.
Yeah. Or that's what happened with the accommodations, you know.
Yeah. Because that's what happened with the men's is Sean put out the word that we wanted to do a men's thing. And then Pete, who has basically become kind of like, I mean, he's just one of the team now. I mean, he's mm-hmm. planning things and he's from Florida. He had a connection with a great location and made it available. And so really without him doing that, the event just wouldn't have, I don't know if it would have happened at all, you know?
Right.
So maybe y'all's second year is really like figuring out what the more long-term thing is, you know, maybe somebody has a connection or, so anyway, you can send us a message through the website.
Yeah, because I like the idea of moving around, like we said, so that more people can come. You know, like if you're not in driving distance, you might not want to come. But if it moves around where it's a little closer to a different part of the country, you know, so.
Yeah.
Nowhere's
I have an idea. I have an idea for the women's event, an adjacent thing, an unofficial thing happening. Is I had considered doing this year, but it didn't. Our youngest is really kind of too young to really jump into this. But I had this idea of like when the women, the wives and mothers are doing their event, I think it'd be interesting for all of the dads who have the kids to gather at some place and have a crazy weekend of dad and kid stuff. We have four, so I don't know. That would be kind of insane, but I don't know. I think eventually I might try to do that myself and see if anybody else wants to join.
Yeah.
The temptation would be though, like if there's an emergency, for instance, I can't remember how to do mac and cheese, that I would have to come. I'd be close enough to come and get you to help me. So
yeah.
It'd have to be far enough where it's still inconvenient, but you know, not too far. But anyway, hey, before we finish up, I did want to have you talk about some of the things that you're kind of putting into the planning phase for curriculum, kids stuff, kids curriculum, stuff like that. Where is that stuff on the, you know, in development?
Yeah. Free Grace International has a children's curriculum already. We have one that Miss Sandy Jones, who we lost this year, she passed away. She had written it and put in just some amazing work into that. And before she died, I'd been talking to her about, you know, possibly doing the next section with it. And anyway, but so I'm trying to think forward to what would be good for different children's ministries to use, because at our little church we've been just using one of Lifeway's curriculums and just kind of modifying it for us. And but most children's curriculums, you know, there's, when it comes to the gospel, there's things that we will modify because it is not very clear. And so it'd be nice if there was just a Free Grace curriculum. And we've talked to many, many people who, different churches who they deal with the same thing. And so what Sandy wrote, is good and, for sharing a clear gospel, but, you know, she told me it's kind of repetitive. It's a lot of the same idea, you know, and had hopes for doing something more that could move more into discipleship, things like that. And so,
yeah.
So we're in the planning stages right now of trying to figure out how to put together a children's curriculum that can be used by Free Grace churches, well, and other churches hopefully as well, but specifically for Free Grace churches that are looking for that. So I would love
maybe even families or homeschool parents who are wanting to supplement with some kind of, you know, it would probably be like weekly, right? I mean, it wouldn't be every day, but.
Yeah, weekly. But I would love, though, to just, I feel like a lot of children's curriculums are written kind of with the idea in mind of we might have visitors every Sunday. And And, or like, we're trying to just, so it's all about just sharing.
Now, why
the
would that make a, why would that make, oh, okay. So it's like you assume that you've got,
every Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Which,
so
I mean,
they're trying to do something different, I guess.
Yeah. I was just thinking it would be nice if there was a, if we could write something that really, teaches kids the Bible, which I think there's a lot of great curriculums that do that, and shares a clear gospel. Not a ton that do that, obviously, you know. But for me, one of the biggest things that I'm trying to figure out how we can do is just to kind of shape a children's ministry that sparks this like curiosity and just desire to get to know the Lord.
Yeah.
You know, like to have a, yeah, to have their own relationship, you know, because I think, and so I don't know, that's probably like a bit more broad than what you're asking, but,
no, I'm, you know, that's good. You know, it makes me think of, so I do the, I guess you know this because you're probably around in the house somewhere when I do it, but, I do the bedtime for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we've started a new thing. We used to do our Bible reading during dinner. And then at some point we tried doing it like before bedtime, but you know, but just recently I started doing it at bedtime after the kids are in bed. And the Bible reading's good, obviously. But one of the things that's been a surprise is I just kind of on a fluke after reading some from Mark, I asked the kids, do you guys have any questions or any ideas or thoughts from what we read? And I think what fuels this is they know if they ask questions, they get to stay up a little later, but because they all ask questions, you know.
Yeah.
Our second youngest, Leo, heard our second oldest, Eli, the other night say, I have a question, but you probably won't be able to answer it. And he was right. Most of the questions I ask, I can't answer because they're about like, they're really about cosmology, you know, like how does God always exist or something? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll give my ideas, but I'll just readily say, we don't really know. But anyway, so our second youngest heard our second oldest say that. And now all of his questions are prefaced with, I have a question, but you won't be able to answer it. It's like a challenge, you know? I'm like, well, let me try, you know? But anyway, what has struck me is that I think what is driving their interest, apart from getting to stay up a little extra time, I think what's driving their interest is not having conclusion answers, but discovery prompts, basically, because their question will be something that's really pretty open-ended. And so I'm trying to say, I don't know plenty. If I don't know, you know, if I don't have an idea, I'll try to tell them when it's opinion, but then I'll turn it back around and try to say, well, what do you think? You know, I mean, like you're reading the Bible too. You have your own ideas. Cause I want them to explore for themselves. I don't want them to feel like they have to be told exactly what the answer is and they have to cookie cutter kind of align with that. I don't want them to be universalists or anything, but I want them to explore on their own because that's what drove me was I got excited as a kid to try to understand it myself, you know, and it kind of had this, you know, I don't know, lifelong goal of I want to understand every line in the Bible. And I think I won't ever accomplish that goal, but it's something I've continually worked at, you know, kind of subconsciously. Mm. If I hear something from the Bible, I want to understand it. And I don't know where that came from, but I want to produce that in the kids. And I think it'd be cool if there is a curriculum that was just comfortable with not having all the answers, because I think what curriculum writers do for kids is they feel like it all has to be simple and it all has to have a conclusion answer, an answer that goes at the end of the conversation, you know. And I'm really kind of more interested in saying, here's the basics that we're really clear on: gospel, what does it mean to believe, you know, who is Jesus, stuff like that. But then also using as kind of like almost emotional bait these bigger questions that kids really do wonder about, but they kind of get signaled to not ask those questions if they get certain kinds of answers, you know. So
yeah, it's like we get focused on trying to push the lesson in instead of trying to draw the lesson out.
That's good.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like
it does. Yeah,
with the current curriculum that we're using, I mean, it is. You can just read the script if you want to. There's a complete script. It literally says, "You say," and then it's time for the kids to respond, and they should respond in a specific way. If you've said what you're supposed to say, they know what they're supposed to say. You know, because I think the reality is children's ministry runs on volunteers, and that's pretty intimidating for a volunteer to, you know, to be okay with just making open-ended questions, because kids will ask some tough questions, you know, and
how to respond to that. Yeah, and there's a challenge in that. I mean, like, for me, I have a master's in theology, you know, so it's like,
yeah, I mean,
I'm not afraid of what I'm going to say to them. I know where the boundaries are. I know what will get them kicked out of the dispensational circle or whatever. A lot of people might have their opinions, and I don't know if I'd feel as comfortable with a random volunteer taking open-ended questions.
Telling your child, yeah.
Yeah, because they may say, well, Jesus is the third avatar of Vishnu. I mean, I don't know what they'll say. So that there is a challenge in that. And also, if somebody is not as accustomed to identifying their own I don't know moments, then a lot of times what they do is they talk as if they know when they really don't. Adults do this all the time, especially to kids. Because for whatever reason, it's like anathema to say, I don't know, you know, but like, it's almost like you'd have to train the grown-ups who are teaching to say, I don't know, if they don't know. And don't assume just because some really confident Bible teacher has told you an answer that it is the only possible interpretation, you know? I mean, again, I don't want to land on universalism, and I'm very specific on what I think we need to believe and, you know, stuff like that. But like,
I want to sow curiosity, a good tool for growing your faith.
Yeah, I want to sow into them this curiosity, and I want them to see you and me having curiosity, you know?
Yeah.
And so me saying, I don't know, but I have two or three ideas on it. You want to hear my ideas? They kind of get excited about that because they're like, well, maybe, maybe I can have ideas too, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I love the idea that we would have a curriculum that does have answers, but also has questions, you know, is comfortable with some of those big questions. Because I think that's good for kids. I think they need to see that the world is not black and white in some of the, like, the fringe areas. Hopefully we're able to approach salvation as black and white, because I think that's how scripture deals with it. I think it's, you know, it's by faith alone.
And I think
it's
that
very
clear,
you know.
It's good for kids to have black and white pillars for their faith. You know, it's like you don't, if you're questioning everything, that's a little scary. And like, you know, if you don't know the answer to anything, that's really, you know, kids do good with just, this is this way, this is that way, you know, that, that kind of helps. But there is a balance there, I think, though, of being able to, standing on top of that pillar, then ask this question and see, you know.
And they have both kinds of questions. I mean, some of the time they have questions that have a really straightforward answer. So I don't want it to sound like it's I say I don't know if I actually
right.
do. Like, for instance, the other night, I think it was Eli said, how do we know that we can trust the Bible? Well, I have very specific reasons for why I think that, you know. And so I didn't start with I don't know on that. I say, oh, great question. Let me give you the
but you
the
also didn't say
reasons.
because we can, because it's the Bible. You gave
I mean, it's real reasons.
Reasons, which, you know, I think is really good for
But so the kinds of questions I'm really talking about, I mean, I call them cosmology questions because most of them, they are wondering that now. They, at about 5 years old or older, kids start to transition into abstract thinking. And so mm-hmm. this is new to them. They're thinking about like eternity and infinity and, you know, the things that fall into just the really big questions that even adults can't answer them, but they've just gotten comfortable not having an answer.
Not knowing.
Kids don't yeah. know yet that there's not an answer that we have access to yet, you know.
Since Leo was four, he's been asking me questions about the Trinity and just, I mean, he just.
Yeah, he asked me
questions from every angle about it. Like he's yeah. just trying to understand. And
yeah, he wants to understand.
Trying with them, you know. It's
like, yeah. I know. Well, and I think the value is seeing a parent that doesn't get red faced and flustered by saying, "I don't know." Like, I don't know, but I believe it. And the reason I believe it is because I trust Jesus. Jesus is this guy yeah. that showed up 2,000 years ago, and he did amazing things, and people died to prove that they were telling the truth about his story. You know, so there's a chain of logic there that. When you work back to it, the reason why we think any of this stuff is because Jesus said so, and we trust Jesus because what he was able to do. I mean, it's yeah. most of the end of the questions. Yeah, that's really the center. And so, like when somebody wants to ask questions about Genesis and creation, you know, a lot of times what I land on is, well, the main reason why we have any trust in Genesis at all is because Jesus, whom we trust, quoted from it. So make of that what you will, but that's why it's in the Bible for Christians, is because Jesus valued it. He saw it as authoritative. But here's the thing. Jesus didn't tell us exactly how to interpret every line. He didn't tell us whether we should be old earth or young earth or whether, you know, I mean, whatever the subjects are. And so There's a limit to it, but it's I think it's valuable for them to just kind of it be reiterated that Jesus is at the center of our trust. We trust him, and the things that we see him say, those are by extension things that we trust, you know. And that's a way easier answer than trying to build a logical explanation of the Trinity. Yeah. I mean, those break down. I mean,
eventually logic. I think that's good to always be zooming out and looking at big picture. Here's what's happened throughout all history, you know, and here's where.
Yeah, big picture is just because we trust Jesus.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the big questions will kind of sneak in the back door for me sometimes, like, oh, but how do I know that God exists? And as long as I stay focused on that one question, I can start feeling a little bit anxious about it. After a minute or two, what I come back to is, oh, but I can't discount Jesus. And I don't mean I can't because I'll be kicked out of the church. I mean, like from my experience and my relationship to it's just the text and the Bible and the words that are written down there, something bizarre beyond my ability to explain, it happens for me within that connection. And so like I can't discount that. It's not experiential exactly, because it's not a single moment where I had some like halo descend from heaven and I heard, you know, dove's wings or something. It's not specific like that. It's a particular relationship that I have that I, you know, this kind of like internal position that I have to the story. And I can't back off from that in a way that's like, oh, I'll just think that that's not real. I mean, I've thought about it from a lot of different ways, and I can't see how the Jesus story isn't real. And so everything else kind of fractally patterns out from that, rather than the other way around. If you start with, like in apologetics, this is one of the things in seminary that they talked about quite a bit, is there's kind of like a, I think we talked about this last week with Dane. There's kind of this one-step approach and two-step approach. A two-step approach is try to prove that there's a God first, and then try to prove that that God is represented by Jesus. But to me, the simpler thing is just to say one step, go straight to Jesus
You know, Paul said that Jesus is the evidence of the invisible God. You know, it's like he is the evidence. He's the center of it. And so, like, anytime we're struggling with the faith, we don't need to start with, well, but what do we believe about cosmology? We start with, who is Jesus? You know, and like, can you legitimately discount his story? And from somebody that's thought about it for years, I can just say you can't. I mean, you can delude yourself into thinking that you can, but you can't. There, every single angle, I mean, he was so brilliant in how he set up not only the story, his own story itself, but what happened after the story with what the disciple, like he set all of this in motion, knowing what the disciples would do. He basically picked people that he knew would die for it, you know, and, or maybe the Spirit empowered them later. I don't know which, but he put all that together knowing that this is what's going to be needed for people to believe it later on, you know? And so whatever it is, it worked on me and I can't back out of it, you know?
Maybe that's a good direction to take then with the children's curriculum is getting to know Jesus, you know, just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I've been thinking about even, you know, we have a Bible study already written for parables with adults and.
Yeah.
Thought maybe we need to just, spend some time listening to Jesus, you know? Not that we haven't. We've been going through the Old Testament with the kids at church. And so, and the curriculum is tried, you know, it makes a big effort to always be pointing, show how the Old Testament is pointing to Jesus coming, which, you know, I thought was really cool. But I am ready to dive into some of the New Testament and talk with them about, you know, to see that sparks. It's like they are at the beginning of their journey, these kids, and you know, at the beginning of their relationship with him, and which is a really exciting place to be, you know.
It's fun
kind
to
of
watch.
A heavy place to be for the adult, you know. It can feel like a heavy place to be for the adult that's, you know, just wanting to see that blossom. And
yeah, I think there's kind of a fear that you'll ruin the kids if you say the wrong thing. But I just like, just remember how resilient they are. It's kind of like saying, well, if I let my kid eat one cookie, he's going to struggle with obesity all his life or something. It's like, they're not ruined by one, you know, misfire. If I don't say exactly the right thing in every situation, you know, God's got, especially if they're young believers, you know, God's got them in his hands and he's directing them. And you know, like last night.
And often he uses the things that we did least expect or don't even remember or accidentally said to impact people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, your kids will remember something that you didn't mean to be a memory, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, so like last night, you know, I did Bible time with them, and then I installed little lights in each of their beds. They don't know this, but the main reason I installed lights in their beds is because when I was a kid, if I wanted to read my Bible after bedtime, I had to go get under the nightlight and the plug, you know. And so I would lay on the floor secretly. I felt like I was like some kind of secret agent, you know. My parents didn't know. but I put lights in their beds, partially, at least, so that they can read after bedtime. And I looked as I was kind of exiting last night after praying with them, and Eileen was reading her Bible under that light, and it gave me memories of me being a kid, you know, under that nightlight. And I was like, okay, so it's working for her. She's connecting with it. She had real questions. Last night was the first night that she actually got her Bible out and wanted to follow along. And at one point, our youngest interrupted because he's just so noisy. He interrupted. He's learning to listen. And I picked up reading again and she hollered out, "You missed verse 7. I was like, "Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry." So, I mean, like she's getting into it. And Eli, our second, he's the question leader. You know, he's got the most questions. Mm-hmm. He's going to be philosophical, I think. And so, so anyway, so far it's been a neat thing. I would love to extend that into some kind of curriculum effort, you know, that.
Yeah.
That, like, honestly, if parents did that,
you know, just spent that time. That is so much more powerful than a curriculum, because I'll finish on this. I kind of got talkative because I was drinking coffee in the first half while you were talking. we're in a different place in our society in just the familiarity with the Bible. Like, we've come from theological circles where it felt just imperative that you make sure that your listeners understand and agree with a particular theological position. I don't think we even need to be there anymore. I think where we need to be is we just need people to be familiar with the Bible in the first place, you know, and if they're not familiar with the Bible, whatever they believe about any theological position is a lot less important than just becoming familiar with God's word. And so a curriculum that approaches something like that would be very valuable, because it's like, that's square one, you know, whatever you want to call it. That is our basic building blocks. If you teach people a theological framework, but they have no familiarity with the actual scripture, they can't actually test whether that framework is accurate or not. And I've actually seen some teachers prefer that, you know, that people don't go read their Bible on their own because they can't challenge the teacher and his interpretation. Yeah. It's inconvenient to be challenged by your parishioners. But I just think what we need is people to be familiar with scripture. That's the foundation. And if they're not, then they're at danger of being persuaded by somebody else, by the Mormons or the Jehovah's Witness or the whatever, you know. So
I've met so many adults, even like within, you know, Bible studies and things, that they're really intimidated to study the Bible for themselves. They feel like they've got to have a tool, or they've got to have a teacher, or they've got to, but just to pick up the Bible and read it themselves is actually pretty intimidating. And it's like, I don't know where to start or how to, what do you do? And, you know, so that is another component to the curriculum that I've been toying around with, is how to teach kids how to study, how to read their own Bible. Yeah. You know, not that they have to like read it in a specific way, but just to make it less intimidating. Like, we're just going to do it together. And, you know, and as we do it together, then maybe it won't feel, because really it's like so often now, you know, kids don't even have a Bible, or they don't bring it. You know, many adults don't bring their Bible to church because it's on the screen, or it's in the printout, or on their phones, you know. And so with that is one thing we've started. We incentivize the kids to bring their Bible every week, and half of them don't really read that well, or, you know, but it's like, but I still want to just, let's just have the habit of carrying it around. Yeah. That's step one.
Carry your Bible.
Just to have it with us, you know. And then step two, let's have the habit of opening it up and looking in it for wherever we're reading together. So it's a little excruciating to get a group of 20 kids to try and find Malachi in the Bible. But you know, it's like, but it's worth the 5 minutes that it takes for us to, you know, sit down with each kid in their own Bible, flip to it. And we got it, you know, and then it's like eventually.
Yeah, because you're knocking the edges off the intimidation. Because if they just can navigate, that's like root level is being able to navigate your Bible. I guess that even comes before reading your Bible, is just knowing where to start and how to get around in it.
Yeah. Mm. So it's just like, there's so many things I want to do, and, you know, but I think it's just going to be a matter of, we're going to try this, see how this works. And, you know. And really, there is no, I don't believe there's one fits all solution, you know, one suits everybody curriculum. Yeah. Really, even like just in doing children's ministry, the short time I have done it, I've realized the power of change and just keeping it fresh for them. It can quickly get stale if you're following the same formula every week, and you know, and they just get bored, you know. But it's like, if we can just change something up this week to keep it fresh, then that's something new to be excited about, and for them to engage with. So anyway, so we'll try some stuff, but I am really open to anybody who has ideas or things that have worked for their children's ministry that they've seen or really loved. And anyway, if they want to shoot us an email, I would love to hear their thoughts as I'm planning this next curriculum.
Yeah, that's true, because this is one of those things that lots of people have experience with. And what we really kind of need is the experiences of people who have been there in the Sunday school rooms teaching kids. There's thousands of people that have done that. And we want to draw on that knowledge of, like, maybe it's just tell us the few things that have worked, you know, and tell us the things
not
that have
just
been
on
a
the
total
teaching
train wreck.
Side. Yeah, not just on the teaching side, but as a kid, if you grew up in Sunday school.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Sandy shared with me one of the last times that I got to sit down with her and we were talking about curriculum. She just shared with me a few things that she remembered that were so meaningful to her as when she was in Sunday school as a little girl. And that was just like, oh, that's maybe an even better question to what worked for you as a kid than what's worked for you as you've taught, because
because you don't necessarily know as a teacher
growing up.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
I can know what this seemed to keep them engaged, or this, you know, this put smiles on their faces, but I don't really know what's in the heart, what's happening, you know.
That's good. Like, what did you remember 20 years later, you know, or what stood out to you as a really important teaching moment? I like that. I think that's good. Well,
so
hey, we're at
sides.
An hour.
Love to hear feedback.
Yeah, both sides. Yeah. We're at an hour and six, so we probably should wrap it up. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts?
No. Thanks for chatting. This was fun.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week and probably have some others. Krista may join us. Her availability often depends on the kids, obviously.
Which I can hear them in the driveway now, so they're back.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that nobody else arrived or was able to join us, because we got to actually talk pretty specifically about some cool stuff. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next week. Yeah.